talking about sports. I never thought I could feel so free, flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports, please listen.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift would be from me and the car.
Okay, I have to stop playing that theme song every week, but I got in here a little late today, couldn't think of what I was going to do, so you can never go wrong with the Golden Girls theme song. All right, everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get into. We got basketball, hockey, but we're going to start off with one of my favorite guys to interview, long time no speak. With us right now on the line from his home, the color commentator for the BC Lions on their radio network, Julio Caravatta. Julio, I guess in football season, this is when you say Happy New Year, isn't it?
Well, I now know, Daryl, that the CFL season has officially kicked off. When I hear from you, I know that it's football season. And it's an exciting time of the year for all of us, because anybody who's been around the CFL, they get excited this time of the year. Training camp starts all across the country, so I'm excited. It's going to be great.
All right, Julio, get right into it. The BC Lions, the defending Grey Cup champions. I mean, the basic question is the one right out of the chute. Is this a team we can look at to repeat, or are there lots of challenges for this football team?
Well, the BC Lions have never repeated as Grey Cup champions, so it's something I've been bugging Wally Buono about for the last few months. But I definitely feel that this team has all the necessary ingredients, again, to be very, very competitive. And really, that's all you can really ask for, because I think you could never, ever play into it. It's such a long season that every team is going to go through some highs and lows, some injuries. The Lions were very, very fortunate last year. They didn't have very many big injuries, and when they did, they had guys fill in and were able to just keep it rolling and not miss a beat. This year, I expect the same. There are not very many changes. They've lost a few guys. And I think the biggest concern for me, Daryl, looking at this team, is the loss of Chris Wilson and the loss of Naughton McKay-Losher. The defensive ends for the BC Lions, Wilson, who has gone to the Washington Redskins, and Naughton McKay-Losher, who has gone to the Hamilton Tiger-Cats, were huge, huge parts of that defense. And I felt that the reason that defense was as good as it was because of their front four and five guys. The pressure that they were able to put on teams, there wasn't one guy that you had to concentrate on. There was four guys or five guys at any given time. And I think that's why you probably saw Tyrone Williams have such a great year and Aaron Hunt have a great year and Brent Johnson have a great year. They all were spectacular. And if you're scheming against that front, there wasn't one guy that you could say, okay, we're going to double this guy and we're going to be able to slow this defense down. There wasn't one guy like that. And if you did double one guy, another guy was going to kill you. And Losher and Wilson were a big part of that. And they need to be able to put pressure on a quarterback. You can't give a quarterback time to throw downfield. If you do, doesn't matter how good your linebackers are, doesn't matter how good your secondary is, most quarterbacks are going to be able to find receivers. So if you can get that upfield pressure, that's what's going to make the difference. And I think for Wally Buono, that is going to be the biggest concern for him. He feels in other spots, say, with the loss of Ryan Thelwell, that they've got guys that are going to be able to replace him. But with Loescher and with Wilson, that's going to be the big key, and I'm sure that all, where all eyes are going to be during training camp.
Are any young guys looking on the horizon right now to maybe
step
in? Well,
I think there's a few guys that I think that they're excited about, but I don't think that he's looking past what he has already. I think any time that you have rookies come into camp, no matter who they are or where they're from, it's just always such a big adjustment for them, and very rarely do you find a guy that can really kind of, you know, who's going to blow your socks off. Not saying that any of the guys they have can't do that, but I think Wally's really excited about seeing the development of a couple of guys that he's had in camp and have had here for a few years. And I'm talking about guys like Ricky Foley, Jason Pottinger, Jamal Johnson, who are going to all be more prominent players this year on that defense. And they feel that they are, especially with Foley, that they're going to be able to maybe get a guy who can get upfield like Loescher could, and they can fill that hole with from within. And as far as Chris Wilson's spot, I think Aaron Hunt's going to see a little bit more time outside where maybe he is more naturally fitted. And I think they just feel that within their own scheme now that they're going to be able to still get some pressure. But as far as a young guy coming in, I don't know of anybody who they think is really going to, you know, who they're expecting to really kind of blow them out of the water. And they're hoping that maybe one of them will, but they're not expecting anybody.
One guy we love here on the UBC Thunderbird campus, Julio, you know who I'm talking about here, number 6 at the linebacker position, Javi Glatton, makes the big play, drawing the fumble in the Grey Cup. What kind of year are we looking at from him, and is this the year he steps up and truly becomes a star in this league?
Well, you know what? I am going to argue that because I'm like you. I am a huge, huge Javi Glatton fan. I think he's a great player. I think that he was robbed last year, to tell you the truth, about talking about being a star. He was a star last year. This kid can just flat-out play, and the numbers that he put up last year were as good or better than a lot of guys who were recognized as all-stars. There's a lot of guys on that. There's a lot of guys across the league who won awards that Javi Glatton had better numbers. And I just think that Javi is going to continue to get better. He has every single time. His confidence has obviously got to be sky high right now after the year that he had. He understands the system better this year. He understands what it's going to be like to start 18 games. And that experience is going to take him even farther. And I think he's just going to even get a little bit wiser. And you're going to see nothing but great things from Javi Glatton. I still contend, and anybody that will listen, I tell them that play that he made in the Grey Cup is going to go down as one of the greatest plays ever in Grey Cup history. It was just unbelievable if you really kind of sit down and break that thing down. I mean, he timed that snap. He throws himself over the line of scrimmage and absolutely nails Robert Edwards in the chest to cause a fumble on the 1 yard line. And where that game would have gone if he would have scored, who knows, as far as if you're a BC Lions fan. They could have given the Alouettes a big, huge momentum swing. Instead, it swung the other way for the Lions.
Julio, going on to the offense now, Antonio Warren came in as the starting running back last year. We know what happened there. Didn't work out for him. He misses key blocks. Dave Dickinson gets killed. Joe Smith comes in, has a good season last year. Is Joe Smith unquestionably the starting running back for BC throughout this season?
Yes, no question about it. And I think that with the addition of Ian Smart, who was primarily used as a returner for most of the year, but during the Grey Cup had the touchdown run. I think that he's the kind of guy that will be incorporated and as a kind of a change of pace type running back for them. And you'll probably see him more involved in a few packages than say Joe Smith. But Joe is a big bruising guy, and he's very, very intelligent running back where he understands not only when he's got the ball, but when he doesn't have the ball, as far as his blocking schemes, his checking and helping out the other offensive linemen, and when he has to release and get into the routes. And he's proven over and over again that he was a very, very good receiver. And when they needed to go to him, you know, he was one of those guys that could catch 7-8 passes in a game. And he was so strong that when he started going upfield, if he breaks a tackle, you know, away he goes. So he's a big play, big play kind of guy that the Lions, I'm sure, are looking forward to having for a full year this year.
And, Julio, as the stat guy for you at the BC Lion Games, this is what I have to know. This is my important stuff, okay?
Give it to me, Daryl.
Ryan Thelwell no longer with the team. Break down the depth at receivers for the BC Lions, because I got to know this, Julio, and I'm giving you guys the stats.
Well, I think that with the loss of Thelwall, that's definitely going to open up some opportunities. I know that Wally's been throwing the idea around because he has some ratio, you know, he can change the ratio in a few spots where he's playing with an extra Canadian now. I think he can go to maybe three American receivers starting. I think that, you know, with Paris Jackson and Jason Claremont, and I think with the emergence of, say, Josh Bowden, who came so far last year and really kind of surprised some people at training camp, and he spent a whole year on the practice roster and was able to learn, and he looks really good, that I think that he is going to be one of those guys that's going to just slide right into that Ryan Thelwall spot. But Tony Simmons and Kendrick Jones are still going to be big players, big play type players that are able to spread the field. And G-Roy Simon, obviously, is still going to be, you know, the number one guy. The season that he had last year and the numbers that he put up, I'm sure that he's anxious to get going again and to prove to everybody that, you know, he is the real deal.
Is the BC Lions offense, Julio, just a dream, though, to be able to step in it as a young guy and maybe be that third or fourth receiver? Is it that good of an offense that if you're there, you are going to be catching passes?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And sometimes I wonder, like, it'll be interesting as the season goes along to look at, say, a guy like Ryan Thelwall and find out what kind of numbers. So sometimes a lot of people think that the grass is always greener on the other side and the teams promise you, oh, yeah, you're going to be our go-to guy. You're going to be, you know, this the offense is going to be built around you. And, you know, Ryan got a lot of money to go to Calgary. And one of the things that he benefited from here, and I think a lot of the receivers realize that when they play here, is that when you play with quarterbacks that understand the game, the way Dave Dickinson does, the way Buck Pierce does, the way Jarius Jackson does, you are going to see a lot more balls come your way because the quarterback understands the way defenses play, and he understands where the ball is supposed to go. And Ryan Thelwall really last year was one of those guys, and not just last year, but probably since he's been here, has really benefited from the fact that he plays with a guy like Dave Dickinson. He sees a lot of balls that most quarterbacks wouldn't throw to him because they don't have that kind of that pocket presence and understanding the defense and to go to where Ryan is, because he plays the wide side of the field and he's usually just an outlet kind of guy. But, you know, Ryan really benefited from that. And it'll be interesting having him go to Calgary to see what kind of numbers he can put. Everyone remembers Chris Brazel. You mean, when he was here, he had that great year, and then he figures, oh, well, I'm going to go and test the free agent market. Not blaming him because, he probably got a good chunk of money to go somewhere else. But he's not nearly been the receiver that he was that year that he was here. Because he as a receiver, you got to realize you're benefiting when you have a quarterback who understands the game and can get you the ball. And if you play with a guy who doesn't get it, it can be very frustrating as a receiver. And I would imagine there's receivers that would love to play in this system with Dave Dickinson because they know they're going to get their share of balls.
Right. So staying with Dave Dickinson and the offense, Buck Pierce, let me ask you what you think he's going to be doing this year. Obviously the backup, but how do you think this is going to play out? He had an excellent season last year, stuck it out as the number three man the year before, was fighting for that backup position last year, beat out a very athletic Paris Jarius Jackson. I had it, Julio. It's preseason, right? Training camp's
That's
just
right.
Starting.
We got to iron everything out, Daryl. Don't worry about it.
All right. I'll fight through it. Buck Pierce, though, I mean, long-term, is this guy just looking to come in and do what he did last year again? I mean, what do you think? How do you think this is going to play out this year?
It's going to be exactly what it was last year, and it'll probably be like that for the next couple of years. If Dave Dickinson re-signs like he's going to re-sign, then I think that you're not going to see much movement there. I think it's going to be Dave Dickinson and it's going to be Buck Pierce, and the two of them are going to be the two guys that are going to lead this team for the next 3 or 4 years, and in Buck's case, probably further than that. They really like Buck Pierce. They really, there was an indication, obviously, at the end of last year when they gave him a big signing bonus and a very, very good contract to be the backup quarterback. They feel that he is going to be the next Dave Dickinson, but they still have Dave Dickinson, and that's the beauty of the whole scenario, is that they've got two top-notch quarterbacks, and actually three if you throw Jarius Jackson in there. But I don't know whether or not if Jarius is the third guy here and he survives the whole year as the third guy, I would be very, very surprised, because I think what's going to end up happening, as it always does, is that somebody along the way on another team is going to have some problems at quarterback. And when that happens, then you're going to get somebody who's going to say, okay, well, let's look around the league. Where can we get a quarterback? And they're going to see a guy like Jarius Jackson sitting there who is definitely a kind of guy that is ready to play and ready to start. And so, you know, it's a case where that position for the BC Lions is a very, 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 very good situation for them. They definitely, I mean, that's what wins games in this league. You have to have great quarterbacking. And when you have one guy, you're lucky. When you have two, you better consider yourself very, very lucky. And in the Lions' case, they have three guys, and really they'd be the envy of the league.
So we can say at this point, Casey who?
Yeah, really. Yeah, I don't. You know, I just. You see, that's a good point to bring up, Daryl, because I don't think that this dynamic would ever have worked if Casey Printers was here. They would never ever be able to say, okay, Dave, you're the guy. Casey, you're the backup, or Casey, you're the starter. Dave, you're going to be the back. It's not going to work. And it with Buck, Buck just understands, and he's one of those guys too that understands that, hey, this is a great team. This is a great system with great players, and I'm willing to wait my turn until I get my shot to be the guy because it's worth waiting. If Buck Pierce goes to Hamilton, if Buck Pierce goes to Winnipeg, is he the same quarterback?
Yeah,
he may not be the same quarterback. He may not, in that system, he may not succeed. And all of a sudden, the Lions say, hey, this is what we want to give you. We want you to be happy. He says, hey, that's going to make me very happy, and I'll be thankful, and I'll just wait my turn. And the relationship that him and Dave have is something that there's no envy, there's no jealousy, there's none of that. They both want to see the team succeed, and when you have guys that are like that, then it's only going to be benefit to the whole team because you got the guy, the main guy, the guy who pulls the trigger, those guys who are competing for a job get along together, and that's a huge, huge plus because we've seen what it's like when they don't get along, and it can be disastrous because it'll pull a team apart.
Awesome. Julio, thanks a lot. Good stuff. Do appreciate it.
No problem, buddy. It's always a pleasure. You know that, and I look forward to talking many, 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 many more times during the year.
I spoke to the BC Lions today again, and it looks like for that June 15th preseason game starting then on Wiener's Barbecue and during our UBC football broadcast this year, we will have BC Lion tickets to give away. So the
nice.
team's giving us that. Not bad,
yeah,
eh?
That's good.
Not bad. It's a step.
You're getting big, Daryl.
Oh,
hey, you know what? Remember me when you hit the big time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You remember me, Julio, when I'm big.
I think it's going to be the other way around, buddy.
Julio Caravetta. Julio, I'll see you June 15th,
yeah.
and we will get in that golf game,
yeah,
okay?
I look forward to it, Daryl. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Julio. Awesome. Julio Caravetta, color commentator for the BC Lions Radio Network. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Every time. Every single time. Julio has been on the show. I'm done sucking up. Okay. All right, everybody. You know, I came here today, and what a day it is today. And I got to tell you, I got a dirty apartment right now. It's a mess. It was clean a week ago. And, you know, you just stop cleaning, everything just builds. And it's to the point where I could probably clean it up in about half an hour. And I got the blinds shut. I was working at home today. Ah, it's a beautiful day. Anyway. See, I haven't been outside. I went for a walk today. That was my enjoy. At the beach, but I didn't get around enough. Anyways, I was going to say, though, to feel the sunshine, to enjoy the weather. You know, I'm wearing my T-shirt today, and I was going to wear my sunglasses in here today. I like doing that. You know, I like wearing my sunglasses while I'm on the radio sometimes and most times, and they actually split in half on me. These guys are no more. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is not happening. I offered them to our program director, Bryce Dunn, here when I got here. He said no. He was smart. I don't know if he looked at the sunglasses, but they are split in two. And unless I get some really good glue and I'm able to put these at a really good angle, these are done. I am in the market again for another pair of sunglasses. You know, I always say to myself, just buy the cheap sunglasses. Just buy the cheap sunglasses. I tell you. It might be time to invest in a half-decent pair that's not going to break, but then I'd probably step on them, and yeah. Anyways, I need a pair. Okay. All right, everybody. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Wiener's Barbecue. It is now 20 minutes to 5. The weather is lovely out there in sunny Vancouver, I assume, because it was nice when I got here at about 4:20. What a day. It's almost like the first day today, you feel, out there. I don't know. I'm done talking. Unfortunately, I got a radio show, and I'm on for another hour and 10 minutes, so I guess I can't stop talking. Anyways, on the show today, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals is going on right now. Anaheim defeats Ottawa 3-2 yesterday. Dave Cernichan, my guy from News 1130, will be on with us. We'll also touch on the Memorial Cup Final. I didn't see a second of that on Sunday. I went to the 8-1 victory on Friday, but I didn't see a second of it on the Sunday. And I saw a 1-0 round-robin defeat. Vancouver lost to Medicine Hat 1-0. I was at that game. Those are the two I got to, but had to work on Sunday. Didn't see a second. I actually read about it in the paper the next day. Or I saw it on the highlights, like just the score that night. So pretty weak by me. But we'll talk to Dave Cernichan. I hear it was a great game. We'll talk to Dave Cernichan about it at 5:30. You know, I'm excited for this team this year. We're going to be talking to Randy Knorr. Always a good interview. What's with me talking like that today? Always great. He's so good. He's my guy. Shut up, Daryl. Anyways, Randy Knorr, assistant head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, will be with us. We here at CITR, it looks like, we don't have it finalized yet, but we are approaching a deal. It looks like we will have we get the rights back to UBC Thunderbird men's basketball, men's football. And we're going to have hockey and women's basketball again this year, but we're pretty excited in that, you know, we've kind of had to fight, you know, the web. We've had to fight webcasts and other radio stations, but this year it's all us again. And September 1st, we're going to have some UBC Thunderbird men's games, it looks like. They're going to be playing in a span of 3 days, Air Force, Boise State, and Oklahoma. That starts September 1st. I know it's a way off, but it'll be here before you know it. Anyways, Randy Knorr, assistant head coach for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, will be with us at 5:30. Dave Cernichan will be with us at 5 o'clock. Also on the show today, I'm going to get into that whole UFC thing that I saw on Saturday. I watched it. You know, I didn't catch the whole, you know, card, but I watched it. You know, I was hoping to have BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas on today. BJ couldn't come on today. Never called him, but he couldn't come on today. But, you know, this UFC thing, it didn't sell me. It didn't sell me. And for all the hype and all the talk I hear about why UFC is better than boxing, you know what? I would have rather watched Royal Rumble than what I saw there. I mean, it's like trying to be like wrestling and, you know, with the hype. And, yeah, it's kind of good, but I don't know. I thought the De La Hoya fight was better than the Rampage Jackson-Chuck Liddell fight. Also on the show today, I got to get into it. If you listen to me, you know I'm going to talk about this sport. We are going to get into the French Open. Started on Sunday. Very strange. Started on Sunday, but it's underway now. And, you know, really not much to say. Couldn't watch very much. But, you know, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal. I mean, if we can get that final, okay? If you're going to watch a tennis match this year, okay? The historic tennis. Well, you never know, because if Federer wins this one, it might be the U.S. Open final or the Wimbledon final. But I tell you, this could be a special one because Roger Federer, of course, if you don't know, he's won 10 major championships. The all-time record is Pete Sampras at 14. Granted, if Rod Laver, this I got to say, because Rod Laver, okay, won the Grand Slam in 1962. He won the Grand Slam in 1969, okay? He was able to play because pros were not allowed in majors until 1968. He won 10 overall, Rod Laver did, okay? He won the Grand Slam in 62. He won the Grand Slam in 69. He won 10 overall, okay? Same as Federer's got right now. But Laver, who won the Grand Slam in 62, all four, he won the Grand Slam in 69, not 68, but nonetheless, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67. A five-year period there. When he won a Grand Slam in 62, he won the Grand Slam in 69. I know I've said that a lot, but I got to reiterate it. Rod Laver was not allowed to play in the majors those years because he was a professional and only amateurs were allowed in. So you could say that if Laver won all four in 62 and all four in 69, got to figure on average, he's good for two a year in between there, 62 to 67, 63 to 67, those 5 years. That puts Rod Laver up to about 20. So if Federer is going to approach Rod Laver, for example, you got to say, Roger, you got to get to 20. But that's just me. You know, that's just people talking. Nonetheless, he's got 10. Roger Federer's won three of the last four Australian Open titles. Merritt Safin beat him 2 years ago. It was, wow, what a match. He's won four straight Wimbledons. He's going for five straight. Bjorn Borg did it. And he's won three straight United States Opens. Okay, that's 10. I believe that's what we're at here. That's 10. Okay, he has never won. Like Pete Sampras was never able to win it. Andre Agassi won all four. Just a note there. Agassi was got eight overall, but he won all four. Roger Federer has never won the French Open, and he's got to play Rafa Nadal. He's got to probably get through Nadal, who's won the last two. And until Federer beat him in the last major event before the French Open, Nadal had won 81 consecutive matches on clay, the most ever. So that's the giant he's got to meet probably in the final if he gets there, Federer. Nadal, I'm going to say, will. But if Federer gets to that final, he's got to play Rafa Nadal in the final, and that is going to be a match. And if Federer can win that, okay, that'll give him 11, and he's now a favorite. He's now 50-50 chance at least, maybe better, to win the Grand Slam this year. First guy to do it since Laver in 69. Boy, would that be something. But, you know, this is the match. And, you know, I liken it to the Dodgers. This is why Federer, to do it, he's got to beat Nadal. And kind of look at it, I'd like to see him do it maybe in about 3 years. Like to see Nadal maybe get to four straight French Opens. And Nadal's beat Federer in the semis 2 years ago and in the finals last year. I liken it to the Dodgers winning the World Series in 1955. They lost to the Yankees in 41. Then World War II took over. They lost to the Yankees in 47. They lost to the Yankees in 49. They lost to the Yankees in 52. They lost to the Yankees in 53. This is Brooklyn versus New York. Then they beat the Yankees in 1955. Seventh game, 2-0. Johnny Padres, complete game shutout. Kind of liken it to that, you know, in a way. If Federer does do it, you want to make sure that he does beat Nadal, because that does it, you know. That just sort of makes it. Anyways, folks, we are going to take a break here on Wiener's Barbecue 101.9 FM CITR Radio. Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. That's the time slot I've got. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When I'm back, we're going to get into some hockey talk with David Chernichan from News 11:30. We'll be right back after this.
Gone. I don't give a f- Let the winter come on. I think I'll try my luck. Always knew it could be bad, though I must admit, if I thought it'd be this bad, I would have split. I am exhausted. I'm black and blue. Don't say you're cheating. Heart's attacking you too. I hear your voice across the Don't cry me up when you figure
Listen. Dave?
Yeah.
Did you get that?
I love it. I love it.
Don't say I don't listen.
I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate. I actually caught myself mouthing the words.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I do.
Does that age me?
What's up?
Does that age me?
No. It means you're like fine wine.
Okay, because I turned 34 last week, and I'm feeling a little old right now.
No. You know what? It was a better TV show generation. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, we'll see the comments on my Facebook after this.
With us right now, Dave Chernichan from News 1130 Radio. So, Dave, before we get into the Stanley Cup playoffs, took place yesterday. Brian Burke's Ducks beat the Senators 3-2. Get into the Memorial Cup final. Vancouver Giants won it. I got to go to the semis. I saw Vancouver lose 1-0 to Medicine Hat, but I was at that 8-1 semifinal game. I had to work the day of the final. Couldn't even see a second of the game. How great was that game, Dave?
You know what? It was absolutely electrifying. The crowd was right into it. They were on their edge of their seats, and when Mario Blizzak gave Vancouver a 1-0 lead in the second after a real hard-fought, scoreless first period, the crowd started to come to life. It kind of tensed back a little bit once Darren Helm made it 1-1, but it went absolutely ballistic inside the Pacific Coliseum when Michael Repik made it a 2-1 hockey game. And, of course, it went once again when Spencer Mihajlik made it 3-1. You know, I credit Ron Toigo and the Vancouver Giants for a job well done. I mean, they played great hockey. All that can be put on the shoulders of Coach Donaghy for getting his players and young players, that is, to buy into his program. But, I mean, for Ron Toigo, I mean, here's a guy. He's been an owner in the WHL for 17 years. He owned the Tri-City Americans for 11 seasons and then wanted to bring a team up to Vancouver. And he got the expansion franchise, and for 6 years to turn this team in from an expansion team to a Memorial Cup champion, I really credit the guy because it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of effort, and he spent a lot of money in trying to do the right things here in Vancouver, and in the end, it pays off for him.
Because the Giants, without a doubt, solidified in this market as a legitimate sports team, aren't they?
I think so, you know, and like I told you, I mean, remember we talked about the two previous weeks leading up to the Memorial Cup. I told you how good the hockey was going to be, and I didn't think it disappointed. You know, it was fast-paced, hard-hitting. I mean, all you have to do is look at Milan Lucic in that final game, and he was like a bull in a china shop just going nuts. And that's hockey. That's the way us Canadians have been brought up on the game. That's the way we enjoy watching the game, which every shift is played like it's your last. And I really credit the team for winning that championship. In a way, you almost think that it's harder to win the Memorial Cup than it is the Stanley Cup, because you only have a certain window in junior hockey to win the championship. And that's because you're changing players. You're losing a minimum of three players from your roster every year. You're going to make trades. You're going to have players taking off to play pro. I mean, imagine how good the Vancouver Giants would have been this year if Gilbert Brule had played for them. He was still junior eligible. The kid's only 19. But instead, he's in Columbus. I mean, these are things that happen. And that's why I think the Memorial Cup is a very special trophy to win.
Right, and the hockey, though, Dave, what caught me, and I just want to ask your opinion on this throughout watching all the games at it, is on the Friday when I was there, it was, you know, that the 8-1 Vancouver victory. There was a point, though, it was 3-1 Vancouver, and there was the bad call against the Giants. They ended up getting the shorthanded goal. But there was a moment there where there was a 3-1 for Plymouth, and then, yeah, Plymouth. There was a 3-on-1 for Plymouth. Or no, Vancouver had a 3-on-1. Then Plymouth had a 3-on-1. Then Vancouver scored on a breakaway. All in a sequence. It was hard-hitting. The teams didn't like each other. There was the great fight. And it was chippy. The refs were letting them play. It was just great hockey. And I sort of got the sense, and I said to my friend who I was with, this is a style of hockey, this hard-hitting, end-to-end, very chippy out there, but fast-paced. Everybody loves it. The NHL's rules have made it, and the way they're calling the game now, you can't have that hockey anymore in the National Hockey League.
Well, I think that goes along with the new rules. Yes, they're trying to clean it up, but the one thing, when the WHL went to four referees and the CHL went to the four officials on the ice, the one thing that they did was they explained to the referees, call what's necessary. We want to get rid of clutching and grabbing, of course, but don't take away from the flow of the game. Whereas in the NHL, they were told, call everything. Doesn't matter. Call it. And I think if you look at the WHL, like in the NHL, I've been on your show and I've said to you and your listeners many a times, I absolutely can't stand the two-referee system in the NHL. But if you watch it in the WHL, where they still let the kids play hockey, where they still let the kids decide the outcome of the game, it's much better. Are the kids any dirtier? Are they any cleaner? I don't think so on either way. But the fact is, they haven't taken away from the flow of the game. The referees have been told, look, call your game. We're giving you an extra pair of eyes out there, but don't take away from the flow. Whereas the NHL, I mean, you know, how many times have we seen a guy tying up another player's stick, which is a perfectly legal move, and they're called 2 minutes for hooking?
But what got me, though, Dave, is that you had teams chirping at each other. You had the fight. You had a fight going on. And I'm sure in junior hockey, you know, you have those games where there's lots of fights going on. And the crowd just loves it. You like to see the teams not like each other out there. You want to see fast-paced hockey like that. I mean, the National Hockey League, fighting's not really a part of that game anymore. And I don't think hockey can ever be as good as it was with the way the rules are now.
Well, you'll never convince me that fighting should be out of hockey. And I realize, you know, you call it a thug sport or whatever, okay? It's not barbarian. I'll tell you, when I played hockey and I played up to senior men's, I got in a few fisticuffs back in the day. And, you know, and the tension that is released from a hockey fight, you wouldn't believe it. You actually feel pretty good afterwards. You feel pretty relaxed. You don't feel stressed out because you've taken your anger out. You've got it through your system. And in the Western League, or in the CHL as in general, you know, they let the players take out the frustration because they understand that a hockey fight, you know, and sometimes they're ugly, okay? I mean, let's not say that they're a beautiful thing, okay? But the one thing is they know, the linesmen and the referees know, that to let a kid duke it out with another kid for 25, 30 seconds is a lot better than splitting them up, not letting them go, and then eventually there's a high stick or a cross check or a hit from behind. And I really do believe that it has its place. And I would love to see more fighting in the NHL. I'm not saying the goonery, you know, the Ty Domi versus Donald Brashear type heavyweight bout. I mean, I like a good heavyweight bout every now and again. okay? But I like seeing the middleweights go. I like seeing the guys, like if you look at the Canucks, like how good of a fighter is Kevin Bieksa when he goes? I mean, he's had some pretty good tilts in his young NHL career, and I really think that I would like to see more of it. The American fan would most likely like to see more of it. I've never seen any American fans at an arena on TV sit down or walk out of the building when a fight goes on, and yet they're trying to tell us and sell it to us that the Americans don't like fighting in hockey.
Yeah, yeah. They hate to see cars crash in NASCAR. They don't like that at all.
Oh, they hate to see UFC.
Yeah, exactly. Dave, and the other question I have about the Memorial Cup, which I loved, it was the crowd down there. You had, unlike Canucks game where it's sort of, you know, I'm here because it's the place to be. You get those people. Tickets are so expensive at Canucks game. They weren't as expensive at the Memorial Cup. And it seemed you had a great hockey crowd in that building.
Yeah, and the one thing that I really enjoyed watching, and I was there every day, and the one thing that I enjoyed looking at, whether it was Lewiston, Plymouth playing, whether it was the Giants, Medicine Hat, or whoever was playing that day, is seeing the amount of different jerseys that were in the stands. I mean, you had people up from Everett, Seattle, Portland up here. You had people from Halifax, you know, Chicoutimi, you know, people really supporting their teams right across the Canadian Hockey League. And I thought that was great to see. I mean, a lot of those jerseys I've never even seen before. I mean, I remember looking at one jersey saying, you know, what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. Belleville Bulls jersey. I'd never seen a Belleville Bulls jersey before. Matt Cook played for the Belleville Bulls, you know. And, you know, I thought it was great. You know, the hockey environment, people were there because they knew they were going to be treated with absolutely great hockey, and that's exactly what the Memorial Cup provided.
And but they weren't, what I mean, though, Dave, is too, they weren't going to the event because it was the place to be. They were going there to watch hockey.
Absolutely. You know, they knew when to cheer. They really cheered them on, and they were very knowledgeable fans at the Memorial Cup. I will give you that.
Awesome. So, all in all, though, Dave, you call this tournament. It sounds like Vancouver wins it. It sounds like you say it was a huge success.
Absolutely. I mean, they set a new attendance record with over 121,000 people. It broke the old mark by something like 38,000 fans through the ticket sales. I mean, some games sure didn't look like it. The one game, the tiebreaker game, there was only about 5,000 people in the stands, but they had 12,000 tickets sold for the game. I mean, that's what they go by. I mean, the crowd was kind of like, what? There's not that many people here.
When they said they attended. Moving on, Dave, National Hockey League, game one of the Stanley Cup Final yesterday. We've got Ottawa versus Anaheim. I was wrong. You were right. Anaheim did beat Detroit. I thought it was going to be Detroit in the Stanley Cup this week. Nonetheless, though, it is Ottawa. It is Anaheim. Your thoughts last night, Ottawa wins. Anaheim wins the first game 3-2.
First thing, I'm going to say I told you so because
yeah.
I'm in six. And that was after Detroit was leading the series.
I know. It was 2-1 Detroit at the time, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and I said, Anaheim in six, and I'm going to pat myself on the back there. But I thought, you know, I didn't get to catch last night's game. I was too busy. Old Davey here plays in some men's slow pitch on Monday and Wednesday night, so I didn't catch game one. But I watched the highlights, and the one thing that I will say from listening to the highlights and everything like that is that both teams came to play. Of course, game one of the Stanley Cup Final is usually sloppy, and there was some sloppy play on both sides. The goaltending was suspect a little bit because, I mean, everybody has their jitters. You're playing for a lifelong prize when you're playing for the Stanley Cup. And I think once both teams settle down, this is going to be a long, hard-fought series, but I still think Anaheim hoists the cup at the end.
Right, and Dave, can we look back on this Stanley Cup, no matter what happens, really, and say, this is the year the National Hockey League playoffs, the heart of it, got bumped for a horse racing pregame show and an ice show. Isn't that really what happened here?
Well, I think that, Gary Bettman, a lot of his things are starting to backfire. I'm not a Bettman fan, I will say that, but he has done a lot of good for the league.
Like what?
Oh, don't put me on the spot. I mean, he's brought in more talent. He's brought in more teams, more markets.
But I think he, this whole television thing and stiffing ESPN, he will never admit to it, but I think he really shot the NHL in the foot. And I thought with the whole television thing with NBC going to the Preakness pre-race show, I thought it was a little bit callous.
Tacky?
Tacky. And you know what? It didn't just make the NHL look bad. I think it made NBC look bad as well.
I disagree, Dave. They've got to put that Preakness show on. They probably told the NHL months in advance this was going to happen. The NHL said fine. And immediately after going to the Preakness, their viewership went up 60% for that pregame show. So that's what the people wanted. I don't think you can blame NBC for that.
Well, I think you can, because if there's a possibility of overtime, knowing in the playoffs that overtime goes on until there's a winner, which I love and I hope never changes, okay, why did NBC demand that that game goes on at 11 o'clock in the morning West Coast time before the Preakness, knowing that overtime could happen and solve a series, okay? If they would have left it at 5 o'clock start, they would have not had that problem. Their viewers, even though it's a smaller viewership, hockey has a loyal hockey fan base down in the States, okay? They would have been able to have the best of both worlds. But NBC's ego got in the way. Gary Bettman's ego got in the way on allowing that. CBC, the only one who's really paying playoff rights, got screwed. Canadian fans got screwed. Yes, we had the option of seeing CBC, but you know what? I like NBC's coverage. I love watching Ray Ferraro. Brett Hull is entertaining. I'm not a big Bill Clement fan, okay? But the whole point is, okay, NBC shot themselves in the foot as much as the NHL did.
I don't think the NBC... I think NBC's kind of irrelevant in this whole thing. I think it's the National Hockey League agreeing and saying to NBC... You know, Dave, it happened months ago when they made that schedule. They knew this was a possibility. This wasn't a, we have to make our decision right now. It's the NHL for agreeing with NBC on this one.
Yeah, but NBC sets the time of when they have the game. The NHL just has to say, okay, we'll take it.
Well, you know what then, Dave? No offense, and the NHL has to become a more popular sport so they have a little bit of clout. You know, that's the problem here.
What the NHL has to do with the media bigwigs is instead of trying to suck up to them as much as they are, because Bettman knows he killed himself when he took ESPN off the air, or the NHL off ESPN.
Dave, okay. I'm sorry to cut you off, Dave, and you cannot understate the value of that year they didn't even play hockey, Dave. That is still a factor down there.
Absolutely. But, I mean, there's so much wrong with the NHL right now, and it's such a mess. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Nashville situation and Jim Balsillie buying the team for $220 million. Okay, you know he's going to move it. Bettman knows he's going to move it. I mean, Nashville is one of the best young teams in the NHL at a competitive level right now, and they're drawing less than $12,000 a game for a playoff game. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you don't deserve a team. I mean, Bettman screwed up there, okay, trying to bring hockey into non-traditional markets. And, you know, there's a cluster of errors that have gone on, and I think it's finally catching up with the NHL right now. But as for the TV thing getting back on topic, I still think it's both their faults.
Okay, we'll disagree on that one, because if I'm a big horse racing fan, Dave, they've got three races a year, and I want to see my Preakness start on time. I don't even know what hockey is if I'm a horse racing fan.
I agree with you, but still, NBC didn't have to run that game at 11 knowing the overtime schedule, and the NHL didn't have to agree to it.
I agree with you, the NHL didn't have to agree to it, but we don't know offhand, at least, what NBC's nighttime schedule was that day, you know? Maybe they don't want to bump 2020 or whatever's on that night. I don't know.
I don't know.
This is the NHL. This is what they've become. It's awesome. So, Dave, you think Anaheim's going to win the Stanley Cup, though? Ottawa, what kind of series are we looking at? You think we got a long series here?
I think Anaheim understands that the Senators are a one-team line. I mean, you shut down the Ash line of Alfredson, Heatley, and Spezza, you're going to go a long way. And that's exactly what they did in Game 1. And the thing is, and like I told you before, even when the Canucks were playing Anaheim, you know, when you're an offensive player and you run into Scott Niedermayer, Then the next shift, you run into Chris Pronger. Then the next shift, it's back to Niedermeyer. Then it's back to Pronger. You know, that wears you down. Excuse me. Those two defensemen are so good and so strong, and they play so differently to each other that you, by the time you figure one out, they're throwing the other one out at you. And it takes teams time to adjust. I think Anaheim is too big. They're too fast. They're too veteran. They have too many good veterans who've won before. And I really believe that this is their year. They're going
to
win it.
You really got to tip your hat, I hate to say it, for Brian, to Brian Burke for getting those two guys when he had the opportunity. Hey?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you right now, my sources told me that Scott Niedermeyer would have been a Canuck for about $5.5 million, $5.75 million, but that's what happens when Dave Nonis went out after Roberto Luongo, and with Marcus Naslund's salary, you couldn't have all three under contract. But I'll tell you right now, I think Scott Niedermeyer is the best defenseman in the NHL. He's the most underrated defenseman in the NHL, and he's just a phenomenal leader. And he is going to lead that team to a Stanley Cup, because there's nothing more that Scott wants than to share a Stanley Cup with his brother Rob.
He's a guy, Dave, if he can pull it off with Anaheim here, you can honestly put him out there. He almost becomes an all-time defenseman, doesn't he? With the Ray Bourques and Chris Chelioses and those guys, doesn't he?
Personally, I think he's better. And I'll tell you why. He may not have – don't forget, his offense over the years – struggled under that stifling trap defense of New Jersey. So we'll never see the offensive numbers Scott Niedermeyer could have put up. Any other team that was free-flowing, I think Scott Niedermeyer is a 70, 80-point man, much maybe a 100-point man, much like Nicklas Lidström has been over the years for the Detroit Red Wings. Okay, but he got stifled in a very defensive system in New Jersey, which cost him points. But you're still looking at the most winningest player in hockey history. Three Stanley Cups, a World Cup, World Champion, Olympic Gold, Memorial Cup, and World Junior Champion. He's the only player ever to win the Big Six.
But unlike Chris Drury, he never won the Little League World Series.
Well, Chris Drury also doesn't have a Stanley Cup ring.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does with Colorado.
Yeah, you missed that one. And he's got the American College one, Chris Drury.
Yes.
So I just like throwing that in because Drury won the Little League World Series. I always like that one.
Well, yeah. You throw that in like every show.
Of course.
Yeah, we're talking golf today, but Chris Drury won the Little League World Series.
Beat Taiwan when they were a stacked team. Awesome. So Dave, this time next week, is the Stanley Cup still going on?
I think it'll go a minimum six games, but I still see Anaheim coming out on top. They're just too big, too strong, and the Niedermeyer factor is going to play a big part in this one. And unfortunately for fans who are Oilers fans, like I was at one point, traded Ryan Smith, it's going to be a killer watching Chris Pronger hoist the Stanley Cup a year after he screwed that city.
Yeah, you're really not a fan. We don't know the whole story, but you're probably not a fan of Mrs. Pronger, hey?
You know what? If I knew the story, that'd be fine. But, I mean, you know what? People should come to realize, okay, that these Canadian kids, they move down south, and it's just like any one of us. It could happen to any one of us. We move down south as a youngster. We grow up in a different city, okay, through our adulthood growing up, I mean. You know, we fall in love, and, you know, we can't expect, you know, the wife to all of a sudden accept something that's brand new and different, especially when you're going from St. Louis up to the freezing temperatures of Edmonton. You know, that's a tough transition for anyone to make. But on the flip side, she should know as the wife of a hockey player, if that's the story, which I believe it is, okay, that you know, anything can happen. And you know, that's part of the game, that you should accept a trade anywhere. You should fulfill your contract, especially when you sign a 5-year deal, and we'll see where it leads down the road.
Yeah, you always hate, Dave, as a sports fan, to see the player sign the long-term deal and then demand to be traded or out of it. It's just kind of like they shouldn't be allowed to do that, I think.
But you know what? What doesn't make sense to me, and I'm going to put my journalist hat on here for a second, is don't give me it's a personal matter and that's all I'm going to say about it. Okay? I realize he was probably protecting his wife who couldn't stand Edmonton. Okay? And I understand that. But how about coming out and saying, look, this is a family matter. My wife and I have discussed this. You know, and we would just feel more comfortable going somewhere else. Yeah, you're going to get the present booze and everything like that, but at least be up front.
Because Dave, I will say this. Chris Pronger, to be honest, should not be allowed to play for Team Canada anymore.
Why?
Because of what he did to the city of Edmonton there.
Yeah, but he's still Canadian.
Dude, if there's anybody who's not Canadian, who is Canadian, it's Chris Pronger, okay?
Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot of players, okay? There's a lot of players in the NHL right now who are Canadian-born who absolutely would not want to play in a Canadian city because of the pressure and the media spotlight and the scrutiny that they would be under on a daily basis.
Then don't sign a long-term contract like that.
Well, we don't know. Pronger liked it there.
Yeah.
Pronger liked it there. Okay, but when it comes to a family matter, you got to do what's best for your family. But if he would have come out and say, look, my wife and I have made a, even if he doesn't say what's wrong, just say, my wife and I made a family decision, and, you know, this has nothing to do with the city, this has nothing to do with the hockey organization, this is a family decision that we made that we are asking for this trade, you know. It's said, it's done. The people won't hold grudges. Yeah, you'll get the boos every time you go into Edmonton. But to come in and play cocky saying, you know what, it's a personal decision, and that's all I'm going to say about it. What do you expect the public to do?
Yeah.
How do you expect the public to react? I mean, that's where the rumors get going of, you know, him screwing around with a reporter there who he allegedly knocked up, but everyone knows if you're in the inside circle, that never happened, okay? And, you know, you just have to take the bull by the horns, eat some crow, and explain why once in a while. But that's the problem with the NHL right now, is their players haven't accepted their role in front of the media when it comes to understanding what the media is looking for. Everything's a big secret, the NHL. Okay, when you're dying for media attention, and this opens up a whole new ball game, you shouldn't have players who are saying, "I don't talk on game day," or "I want out of a 5-year contract for personal reasons,"
yeah,
or anything like that. I'm sorry. Tell us why.
Well, Dave, I will say this: is every sport that's sort of come out from the fringes and made it big in the American market, the athletes have given the media everything they've wanted, and they're very open with the media. Every sport from the fringes, that's what they've done.
Absolutely, and that's what you got to do. I mean, a classic example that the NHL should be following. Everybody says, "Oh, you got to follow the NFL. You follow the NFL because they're the biggest and the best." The sport that I would follow right now, and I'm not a gearhead by any sorts, okay, but I would be following NASCAR. NASCAR's publicity and getting the drivers out in front and getting the drivers in front of the media, they never turn down interviews. They're always very happy to talk with the media. That's the motto the NHL should be following, because right now NASCAR is the fastest growing sport in North America. And if that's what the NHL wants to be like, how about learning from the best right now?
And the one that I was thinking of, Dave, is this one. I'm not a big fan of this one either, but UFC. Those guys are front and center, giving the media everything they want anytime. And it's the same story there, because that's a sport. Without the media attention, it would be nothing, but they're just giving the media anything they want. So there you go.
Absolutely. And the thing is, the NHL, from top to bottom, doesn't consider that possibility of what the media can do for you. Okay, everybody thinks that, oh, the media is evil. All you have to walk into the Vancouver Canucks dressing room and realize that it's not media relations, it's player protection that their staff. And you know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you've tried to get Canucks on your shows. How successful have you been?
Not at all.
Okay, you know what? I work for a major station in Vancouver for News 1130. I'll make the plug right there. Traffic and weather together on the ones, 15 and 45 sports.
Thank you, Wiener. Well done.
Thank you. Okay. But you think if the Canucks are on the road that we can get somebody? No,
yeah.
We can't get anybody. Why not? How hard is it on a game day to talk to one player, okay, one player, and hand over the phone for 3 minutes? How tough is that?
Yeah.
Is that going to ruin his schedule? Is that going to ruin his game day? Is that going to make him is that 3 minutes that he's sitting in the cab from or the bus from the arena on the game day skate back to the hotel, is that going to wear him out?
Dave, I'll say this. The team that holds their radio rights in this city can barely get the team to do that.
Yeah, I know that. I have friends over at Team 1040,
yeah.
And you're right. They go through the same problems, and it's not good. I realize the Canucks players are sick and tired. They deal with us all the time, okay? But I'll tell you, if you look at the public relations departments of some NHL teams, and an example, the team, the Anaheim Ducks PR guy, Alex Gilchrist, guy is phenomenal. Or the guy in Detroit, they do a great job. You know, hey, dressing room's open. You want to go in the back room and talk to the players? Go right ahead.
You're a John Hahn fan, are you?
Absolutely. The LA Kings. I apologize. I don't know their name.
Mike Kanellowski?
Something like that. The name isn't really important, though. But, I mean, these guys know that their job is to get their players on TV. And you know what? And why the NHL hasn't also adopted the idea that any player who is on TV who is wearing a hat should be wearing his team hat?
Yeah, you always said this. Yeah, yeah.
Okay? That's free advertisement.
Yeah.
You know, instead of looking at the media as the evil empire, look at them at how they can help you. And the NHL does not get that.
No, because if you're nice to the media, they will suck up to you like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's not so much sucking up.
Yeah.
But what it is it's giving you more press. If you're good, okay, if you're good to the media, how much more press are you going to get? And if you're getting more press, how many more people are going to read the articles on your team? How many more people are going to buy newspapers and watch the television stations where you're making money off their revenue from showing your games?
I will say this, Dave, and I'll just to go back to this, and everybody thought the media was being tough on this guy. When I was going into that dressing room, I did not want to go up to Todd Bertuzzi and talk to him. He gave that impression.
No, I mean,
that's another story, but yeah, I know. I will just say that.
Todd's just a different bird. Okay, but I mean, I remember a few years ago when the Canucks were playing in the playoffs against St. Louis. Okay, walking into the St. Louis room.
Greatest guys in the world, Dave.
Doug Waite would sit there from the time he got off the ice. He wouldn't even have his skates off. He would say to us reporters, hey, guys, I've just done a few interviews. Do you mind if I just get my skates off before I answer your questions? You know, and you're like looking at Doug Waite like saying, holy cow, here's a $6 million player asking us just to bear with him for a sec or if we would mind.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I hear you. I remember that. Awesome. Dave, I got to move on here. Great stuff today. Do appreciate it. And, you did say Anaheim was going to beat Detroit, and I was against you on that one. So I guess Anaheim will beat Ottawa. I guess that's how it works out this year. Are you betting on it at least?
No, I don't bet on sports.
Okay, that'll show.
When the minute I put money down, my predictions go wrong. So I'm not putting any money down, but I will say this. The nationality of the captain will come true.
Oh, no Alfredson, no Alfredson. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Dave, thanks a bundle. Do appreciate it.
Take care.
Get it. All right, everybody, that was Dave Churchan from News 1130. Always happy to have Dave on. Okay, we're going to take a break here. When we get back, we're going to have Randy Knorr, assistant head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. They are going to be starting their preseason not till September 1st. They're going to be taking on, I believe, Oklahoma. But we're going to have Randy Knorr on to talk about a team who has lost one of their all-time greats, Casey Archibald. He's graduated. That's how it works in this league. Pretty fun. Nonetheless, Randy Knorr from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team will be with us. We'll talk about their recruiting in the offseason. Who's going to step up this year? Is it Chris Dick's team? We'll find out after this. I now have to go play the rest of Greatest American Hero that I cut off earlier.
Just like the light of a new day, hit me from out of the blue, breaking me out of the spell I was in, making all of my wishes come true. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not,
I play way too many theme songs. That is the truth. Randy, you a Greatest American Hero fan at all?
Oh, yeah, buddy. I'm all over it.
are you just playing with me, or did you watch that show?
I did watch it.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. With us right now, assistant head coach for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Randy Norris. So, Randy, first off, I saw you at about 4:30 today. You are extremely tanned. Where's this coming from?
I just got back from Mexico.
Ah, so you took in the rays? You got some color?
I did.
So
I was down in Cancun for one of my high school friend's wedding. So yes,
you made the most of it, hey?
I did, but the only problem was I missed a trip to Taiwan because of it.
Is that what the team is? Who's in Taiwan right now?
The UBC men's team is in Taiwan right now.
What are they doing in Taiwan?
They're playing an international tournament in Kaiyan University.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's 8 or 9 different countries there.
Yep, okay.
So, yeah. I heard they won their first game by 50, so.
Who'd they beat by 50 points?
I don't know.
That's a big win, hey?
I would assume it was.
So we're assuming everybody got some minutes in that game.
You'd hope so.
All right. With us right now, Randy Knorr from the UC Thunder men's basketball team. So, Coach, obviously the big thing for you guys as, you know, part of a school, one thing you really got to do, and it makes you a better team, recruiting. So the dust is settled now, and I had Vern up on a couple times, but now that the dust is settled, what were you guys able to accomplish in the offseason? Because I assume you're not getting any new players anymore. Who you have is who you get. So who did you get?
Well, I wouldn't say who we have is who we get just yet. We're still working on a few things. Right now we have Nathan Yu from Vancouver College, Jordan Yu's younger brother. I'd say littler brother, but that's not the case. He's about 4 or 5 inches taller than Jordan, and I don't want to say a better player, but he might be.
Yeah.
He's going to come in and be an impact player right away.
I do have to say with Nathan Yu, we did here at CITR when you guys were at the Men National Championships, we did some high school basketball games, AAA finals, and
yeah.
I did that game when Dover Bay had that big comeback against them, just so you know, and Nathan had a rough second half that day.
I know, that was the first time he played basketball in 2 months was prior to the provincial, so I thought he did pretty good for a guy that hadn't played in a game in over 2 months.
Right. Well, you're looking long-term. I was just looking at that. As Vancouver College, you know, one of the great teams that this city has, you know, loses to the underdog Dover Bay. I just got a kick out of that personally.
Yeah, I would have too if we were recruiting someone from Dover Bay, I guess.
Awesome. So you got Nathan Yu, and he is a guy, though, you think, because I saw him, he's got a ton of skills, and he can jump, and he can shoot, and you can see it. He's got game. So this is a guy, I assume he won't be starting for you, but you think he will be getting minutes for you right out of the shoot, hey?
I think he will be. I think he'll be an impact player right away for us. He might be one of our most ready freshmen in a while, I think. Probably maybe since Casey.
Yeah.
I don't want to compare him to Casey, but he might be one of the guys that's ready to play just like Casey. The next guy that we got coming in is Graham Bath. He's from Brookswood Secondary School. He's 6'5", 6'6", power forward. I don't want to put any of the guys on the team down, but he might be the strongest guy on the team right now. He's a big, thick kid that will definitely help us in a few weaknesses that we've had as a team in the last few years.
I'm drawing a blank. The kid also went to Brookswood. He was Graham Bath's teammate on your team.
Brent Malish.
Yeah, Brent Malish. So Brent Malish played with Graham Bath in Brookswood. I didn't get to see Brookswood in the AAA. They didn't make it to the provincial tournament. But is this a guy? What do you see his schedule being playing for you guys?
You know what? I think he's going to play a lot more than people think. He's going to probably be, I think he might be our first sub off the bench for post-wise. He just gives us a physical presence. He's just one of those guys that just battles and competes all the time. Physically, he's ready to play. He loves the weights. We had a summer league game a few weeks ago, and he matched up with Aaron Christensen, and he did probably just as good a job as we've done on him in the last 5 years. Mm. So I think he's going to come in and help us out right away.
Because that is a need for you guys, isn't it? That big, strong guy in the post. You do not have a lot of depth at that position.
No, definitely not. He's going to come in and help us out right away, I think, that way. So
good.
Both him and Nathan were on our provincial team, and both were starters the last 3 years. So they're coming in with a vast amount of experience behind them. So, yeah, it should be good.
Okay, and who else we got?
We got Nick Adair from GP Vanier. 6'8", athletic, averaged a triple-double his grade 12 year in rebounds, points, and block shots. Might be one of the best shot blockers I've seen come out of high school in a long time.
Yeah, we saw him in the AAA tournament, but he actually hurt his ankle in the game we were doing. So
Okay. Really
didn't get to see too much. You know, he was hobbling. You could see it. He was hobbling up and down the court. Seems like a big guy. Am I to say, though, that he will be a project player for you guys? You can see he did look a little raw out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not going to come in and be an absolute impact player right away, but in his next few years, I can see him sliding into a position pretty nicely. He'll give us a little bit more athleticism up front that we really haven't had in the last few years.
He has to work on his interview skills, by the way, from my perspective.
Perfect. I'll talk to him about that.
Thank you. Who else we got, Randy?
We got a kid named Blaine LeBranch. His little bit older kid, played at Brandon 1 year, sat out a few years, did some traveling, and last year he played at Grant McEwen College. I believe he's Casey's age, so 22 years old or 23 years old. A little bit more experienced. He's a guy that's going to come in and be ready to go right away.
Is he the scorer I've been hearing about?
He is. He averaged 20 a game in college, shot 47 or 48% from three-point land, about 6'4". He's athletic. He'll help instantly.
What position? What position?
A 2-3. So I would predict that it would be him and Chris Dick in the backcourt with possibly Alex Murphy would be our backcourt.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a little interesting. So it will be so where does Matt Racher fit in for you guys this year, if that's sort of the case? I mean, it sounds like a team with a lot of depth again, but how are you going to juggle that?
You know what? Right now, if I was a betting man, I would say on opening day, starting lineup would have Matt Racher at the four, Bryson at the five, just like normal, and then with Chris Blaine, and then probably Alex Murphy at the one.
So Alex Murphy, a guy, and you're the guard coach here, so tell us about Alex Murphy this year. Came in as a true freshman for you guys last year out of St. George's, so he's that age, and this is a guy you think will be a starting point guard this year, year two, for what is always a national championship contender.
Yeah, you know, I think, I'm not sure if he's 100% ready, but he's pretty close. At the national championship tournament, he led the tournament in assists. He showed signs of greatness. Then he would show a few signs of his age. But in all, I think he's ready, and I think good things are going to happen when he's out there. And yeah, I mean, we're also very lucky too that we are very deep. So a guy like Brett Leversage will come and help us right away. He's going into his third year, so he'll be able to help Alex, so Alex won't have to do it all himself. So I think we're in good shape.
So what about comparing to what some of the other teams in your conference has done? So actually, before we get on to that, you say you're not done recruiting. Who are some of the guys you're looking at right now?
No, there's a few out there that are secrets. As soon as we got them locked up, you'll be the first to know, buddy.
I appreciate that, Randy. And the guy you lost out on, I loved him when I saw him in the provincial tournament. Tough kid, Danny Dumas from St. Thomas More. He went to North Dakota, I heard. You couldn't land him, hey?
No. Denny has decided to go division. His goal was always to play Division One, so North Dakota offered him a full scholarship. So he's going to go there, play Division Two for 1 year, then they're actually transferring to Division One the following year. So he thought he went down there and he just fell in love with the school. And yeah, so he's not a guy that we'll give up on, though. If he goes down and things don't work out, we'd love to have him back. So.
Right. We'll see how it goes. And comparing yourself to the other schools, I mean, you know, SFU's done some recruiting this offseason. Haven't read too much about Victoria. What's going on in your conference so far? How are the other teams faring up? And who are some of the stars that came into the Canada West?
SFU hasn't really brought in any significant stars. They've brought in some pretty good role players. They don't really have anybody that's going to come in and replace Aaron Christensen. They're going to do it with a few different people. They actually have a first team all-star from the AAA boys tournament, Greg Gillies, the kid from Dover Bay.
Yeah, I really liked him, Randy. I saw him shooting those three ball, and they won the championship. He's a winner.
Yeah. So, I mean, he'll be a guy that'll come in and kind of help them fill that void of Aaron. They got a guy that actually played a few years at Vic, sat out last year and is now transferring to SFU, Matt Kwiatkowski or something like that.
Yeah.
I might butcher his name there a little bit.
Kaminsky, isn't it, or something?
Kaminsky, there you go. Steve.
Thank you.
That's why you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, let me tell you. Well, when you broadcast the games, you always remember the real weird ones.
There you go. So they have those guys coming into SFU. UVic has a pretty good little recruiting class. They have a kid that I really liked from the high school all-star game, Ryan McKinnon. He'll be able to come in and be an impact guy, I think. They have another kid from Alberta that's going to come in, 6'3", athletic guy. Supposedly they have one that's a secret that I heard through sources through Jacob Dirksen that they're trying to keep on the hush-hush. So you never know. I'm not really sure. A lot of the other teams, to tell you the truth, didn't really bring in that much. Trinity really didn't lose anybody. I think they lost one player. Fraser Valley didn't lose any, and we'll have 6 fifth-year guys next year. Thompson Rivers has brought back one guy that played 2 years ago that's going to finish his fifth year. Then they brought in a few guys from Alberta as well.
Awesome. So sounds like it was you and UVic that made the most gains, is what you're saying.
I think so. Some teams are going to be good. I think Fraser Valley is going to be good just because they're going to have so many fifth-year guys. SFU is always tough. It'll be interesting to see how everybody's going to adapt to the new rule changes. As an announcer, I think you're going to enjoy it. It's going to speed up the game a little bit.
No, I like the slow pace. Gives you time to actually sometimes call a play and catch your breath.
Yeah, I can see how you might need that help sometimes.
Yeah, let me tell you. The guy I do want to ask you about, though, he went to Dover Bay. You saw I fell in love with this team. Pat McCarthy, he had a great tournament for them. Did he go anywhere? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I do know who you're talking about. He is going to Malaspina College. I think he needs to upgrade on his school a little bit. He'll be a guy that we'll look at in the next couple of years.
Oh, got to get those grades up, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. Awesome. Randy Nort, Randy, thanks as always, and I'll be around and I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
September 1st, Oklahoma, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, that was Randy Nort, assistant coach from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Yeah, there's a guy I'm a fan of, and that's what's fun about getting out to that BC High School AAA basketball tournament. Never did it before since I've been in high school myself, and Greg Gillies, UBC never got him, but I'm a fan of him. SFU, all right, Greg Gillies. So there you have it. Yeah, we here at CITR, it looks like we don't have the... It's not official yet, but it looks like we are going to be doing many, many UBC Thunderbird men's basketball games this season. We've basically been given the rights to do the games. Not official yet, but we're going to try to hammer out a schedule, and we're hoping this year to have the schedule done June 16th, and I am hoping to hammer it in that we are going to be doing. UBC's got three games versus NCAA Div 1 teams, exhibition games, starting September 1, 2, and 3. The women are playing two. The women are playing, I can't remember who the other one is. The women are playing Arkansas and somebody else, and the men are playing Oklahoma, Air Force, and Boise State. Remember Statue of Liberty? What was it? What the hell was that? What was that national? What was that big football game? What was it? Boise State. It was a BCS bowl. Was it the Sugar Bowl? Was it the Cotton Bowl? Was it the Orange Bowl? It could have been any one of those, actually. I don't remember. Boise State beating Oklahoma. Oh, we've got our story. Boise State beat Oklahoma. We can run with that. All right, we're set because UBC is going to be playing two of those three teams. Exhibition, NCAA, Div 1. I've got my story. I'm happy. All right, folks, Mike with Fletcher Head. He's in the building. I saw him here, so he'll be on right at the 6 o'clock hour. It is currently 10 minutes to 6 o'clock. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. on our first Tuesday without American Idol. American Idol is now over. Jordan Sparks won American Idol. You know, I said Sparks like I don't know. You know, I kind of know. I know. I watched it quite a lot this season. I didn't watch the end. It's kind of weird. Once Sanjaya Malakar got kicked out, I sort of started watching less and less. And stopped kind of watching near the end. You know, I can say that proudly. But ooh, there was a while there. I was watching both shows. I watched all the rehearsal shows. I suck. What can I say? But what I want to get into now is we've only got about 8 minutes left in the show. Mike with Fletcher Head is on at 6 o'clock, as I already said. Is what I'm going to get into now is that whole UFC thing. And Chuck Liddell fought Rampage Jackson for the light heavyweight championship on Saturday night. And the UFC people were kind of pumping it up that the bust of the De La Hoya Mayweather fight a couple weeks before and how we're so great, we're all that, and, you know, you're going to see a fight here. Well, we saw a fight. We saw a very quick fight. We saw a minute and 35-second fight. Rampage Jackson knocked out the fan favorite, Chuck Liddell, caught him with a big right. Liddell goes down, and then just pounded him down on the ground. Ref stopped it very quickly. And the fight was over, just like that. They sort of danced around for a minute, one punch, boom, it's done. And, you know, you sort of like to compare that maybe to Michael Spinks knocking out Mike Tyson. Not even close. The UFC doesn't have anything on boxing, as a matter of fact, from what I saw, and that's my opinion. Not that it matters, but that is my opinion. Boxing is a superior sport, and it's a better sport to watch. I do not doubt saying that one bit. You know, boxing may not deliver every time. It may be a world of hype. It may be a crock of crap, even boxing. But there is something that when you get a great boxing fight, one that lives up to the hype and one that truly delivers, there is almost nothing like it in pro sports. If there is anything like it in pro sports, I'd like to see it. Where UFC, basically a bad boxing fight, is better, is longer than a bad UFC fight. That's what I've learned. Maybe a great UFC fight is better than a bad boxing fight. Well, I haven't watched these UFC fights long enough to be able to make that comparison. And also, boxing has the tradition. UFC has no tradition. None whatsoever. And where boxing you have after a fight, Larry Merchant sitting in his corner for HBO interviewing the fighter. And if Sugar Shane Mosley goes out there and has a great knockout, but he knocked out somebody who everybody knew he shouldn't have been fighting, Larry Merchant for HBO will hammer him on that issue. Will say, you know, Shane, shouldn't have you have fought somebody better tonight? Sorry, Eric, for spitting on the mic there a little bit. And so forth. Where, you know, in the UFC, right after the fight, you have Joe Rogan, the guy on news radio, running out and saying, oh man, you are awesome. Tell me about it. And you've almost got this phony hype up going on, much like wrestling. But where wrestling, you know it's phony. UFC, they try to tell you how great they are all the time. And it didn't do it for me. You know, every UFC, it's all about the packaging and all this stuff. Well, I'll stick with my guys in the two gloves who are pounding each other. And one thing I saw with Rampage Jackson when he knocked out Chuck Liddell in this fight is that, you know, Liddell went down pretty quick on that punch. And everybody says how the UFC guys are better than the boxers. And I'm going to go out and say that if UFC, you know, got to fight a boxer head-on-head and the boxer's got his gloves and the UFC guy gets to do everything he does, well, the UFC guy would win because he would just kick the boxer and the boxer couldn't get inside. But if they went out and had a fight, had a street fight, I tell you, if Lennox Lewis had caught, or Roy Jones Jr. caught Chuck Liddell with one of those punches, it's over. He's not moving. Where when Rampage Jackson hit him, he was sort of woozy. Man, if Roy Jones Jr. is hitting him with one of those punches with the gloves on, lights out, you ain't even getting up. So don't tell me that these boxers aren't anything, because they sure can throw a punch. Where the I'm not saying the UFC guys, it's not amazing what they do, but sorry, I gave it a try. And I'm sticking with my boxing, I'm sticking with my horse racing, my baseball, and my tennis. So that's the other thing going on. French Open, about 2 weeks from now, hopefully we will have the ultimate final between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. That will be fun. All right, Eric with the flex your head. Mike, oh, I did it again.
Two weeks in a row.
Mike with flex your head in the studio right now.
18 years.
You gotta get used to the name Eric. You do. Is the weather still sunny out there?
It's sunny and warm.
Oh man, you know I
and I'm inside.
I'm inside too, and I was working at home today. And I had the blinds closed in my apartment too. What was I doing?
I don't know either. I'm out there in the sun. See my little dragon.
Oh, you right got here. You got the farmer only on one arm.
It's my driving arm.
You got the driving arm mascot. See, look at me, nothing.
At least you're more even than I am.
Yeah, you've got that is awesome. That your left, your lower, your shoulder down, your elbow down on the left arm.
The watch tan.
Oh, you know what though? Nothing beats a watch tan, no. And nothing beats a sock tan.
I don't have big, a sock tan. I got shoe tan.
You, same thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of both of those.
Yeah.
Nothing actually beats the watch tan.
The watch tan is like a badge of honor.
Yeah, it is a badge of honor. I really like, and I like the shoe tan too.
Yeah.
I like both of those. I will use those all the chance I get. Awesome. So, Eric with Flex Your Head, we got a song I can play so I can get out of here?
You can play.
We're loading up.
Let me load up.
Mike is here. Like to thank all my guests here on Wiener's Barbecue, 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada, every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. We had Julio Caravata, commentator for BC Lions Radio Network. We had Dave Chernichan from News 1130, came on to talk a little hockey with us. And Randy Knorr from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, assistant coach, came on to talk a little UBC Thunderbird off-season recruiting. So those are my guests today. And yeah, there you have it. You know, I actually have September 4th. He said he'd do it today. Hockey Hall of Famer and all-time great Jean Béliveau will be on the show. That'll be fun, eh?
Oh, that's exciting.
That'll be fun. And also joining me also on that show, it looks like I will have the guys in Knocked Up right now, that new movie coming out on June 1st, which is Friday. And then he's also going to be doing this movie Superbad coming out August 17th. Seth Rogen will also be on the show September 4th. Yeah, he's the Vancouver kid. Jewish guy. I know him.
Yeah.
He's a Jewish guy.
40-year-old virgin.
So he's going to... See, I'm going to start hyping up September 4th. That's my big show.
Yeah.
Nothing till then. No. All garbage. Yeah. All junk.
Give the listeners something to look forward to.
Something to look forward... Gives me something to look forward to.
Nothing but crap till September 4th.
Yeah, nothing but junk from here on in. Today was great, but it's just going to go downhill from here, so you probably shouldn't listen to me and just change the network.
Okay.
You're not supposed to say that, right?
I won't do that.
You
my radio's tuned in
every time. Awesome. I'm just kidding, but yeah, it looks like those guys will be on September 4th. All right, what am I hitting here, Eric? Mike?
Number one.
I suck, eh?
That's like three times tonight.
Three times. You can tell, it's the brain is, it doesn't work well normally. Today it's not even working at that rate. So it's like, you know, it's even worse than...
Because the sunshine, that's what it is.
No, it's not the sunshine. It's because the sunshine's there and I'm not in it. You know, I'm not in it. So there you go. All right, I'm done. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. Number one?
Number one.
Okay, here we go.